What a joy it is to be here with all of you. We've been here, as you know, my name is Naiswami Durga, and this is my husband, Vidura. And we've been here for 2 weeks. It's gone very fast. We have been able to connect with many of you, and I don't even know if I can talk. It's just been so beautiful to be here. You have created such a beautiful temple for Master, both this building and in your hearts. How pleased he must be to see all of you and what you've done, not only physically and just what you've done to your own selves, how you've grown, how you've changed, how you've been open to receiving God's grace. So it's just been a real beautiful experience for us. To try to get out of these tears, I will tell you a joke. The topic, as you know, is Can Man See God? And in the frontispiece of the autobiography of a yogi, Yogananda's autobiography, there's a little quote from the Bible that says, "Except ye see signs and wonders, ye will not believe." So I was reading this little story. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it's true. Helen might know. And it's a story about this man who had this little four-year-old, his daughter Lois. And he would take around Meals on Wheels, which is an organization that takes meals to elderly people. And maybe also sick, I'm not sure. But in this case, elderly. And so they would go from place to place and taking these meals. And this little girl, this four-year-old girl, Lois, she was fascinated by all the mechanical parts of what make up an elderly person's life. Wheelchairs, canes, walkers. She was just fascinated. And every time she'd see one, she'd ask him what it was and how it got to be and how did they use it. And he would tell her. And then one day they were walking through one of these facilities and she sees this glass, and inside the glass is a pair of false teeth. And so he's ready, you know, he's ready for the, what are these and how do they use them and what are they for? But all she did was she looked and she stared and stared at these teeth, and then she looked up and said, "Oh my God. God, wait till the tooth fairy sees this." So, signs and wonders. For a child, there they are, false teeth. For those of us who might have those false teeth, it's more than a sign. It is a wonder, but it's more than a sign. But anyway, in the autobiography of a yogi, it starts out one of the very first wonderful stories is of, his name is Abhinash, and he is Yogananda's father's, one of his best friends, and he's an employee of Bhagavati, who's the name of Master's father, they call him Bhagavati. And so he's saying to Yogananda one day, "Did you ever hear the story of how your father became a disciple of Lahiri Mahashaya?" And so he very eagerly, as we children love to hear stories of our parents, said, "Please tell me." And he said, "Well, you know, your father didn't really believe in much. You know, he probably had a faith, but he hadn't cognized it yet." And Abhinash went to him one day and said, "You know, my guru, Lahiri Mahashaya, is coming, and I'd like a week off so I could go visit him." And Abhinash, and Bhagavati says, "You're just a fanatic," he said. "You've got to stop being fanatical, and you have to live on the practical world and just go to work and make money." So he's very sad. And he was walking down this lane a couple days later, and Bhagavati comes up in this palanquin, and he gets out, and he's walking with his employee, Abhinash, and is trying to console him a little bit. And then they come to this field, and it's this astral, this light that's coming down into this field, and they're both looking at it. And all of a sudden, Lahiri Mahashaya materializes in this field. Unbelievable. I was thinking, what if I walked down El Camino and went into a vacant lot and Master was just appearing in the light there. It would be that incredible, just incredible to him. And Lahiri Mahashai says to Bhagavati, "Bhagavati, you're being much too hard on your employee." He goes, "Oh my God, who is this person?" And he vanishes. And so Bhagavati turns to Avinash and he says, "Not only do I give you leave to go, but I'm going with you. I want to meet this man." And so they go to Benares, where Lahiri Mahashai lives, and he and his wife are initiated, and they become disciples and become extremely devout. Another story in the autobiography, it's always, I love the story for a number of reasons. One, because we've been to this particular place, but it's the story of Master's sister Roma. Master had 7 brothers and sisters, and his oldest sister was Roma. And when his mother died at age 11, Roma was the one who became the mother of the household and took care of all the children. I think his youngest brother was just 1.5 years when she died. And so they had a very strong connection. And one day Roma comes to him and says, "You know, my husband is just making fun of everything. Makes fun of you. He makes fun of any spiritual path. If he sees any picture of any spiritual person, he makes jokes about them." And he said, "Could you please help him to become a disciple?" And he said, "Well, let's see what we can do." And so he says, "Well, tomorrow we're going to the Ramakrishna temple." Ramakrishna was a great avatar too. And he said, "Why don't you bring him along?" So they go there the next day, and the whole way there, his name is Satish. All the way there, Satish is saying, "Oh, this is so stupid. Your brother, he's just crazy. There's nothing regal about him. There's nothing holy about him. He's just a fraud." So this is what she lives with. It's not too unusual for her, but she's starting to cry. And Master said, "Don't worry about him. Don't worry about him." So they get to the temple, and then Satish says to him, because it's what they do in temples in India, they will bring you food, but you have to let them know ahead of time. And so Satish says, "Don't you forget to order our food. I'll be over here waiting for you." So Yogananda goes, and he sits under this portico that many of us have sat under, meditated, chanted under. And right there where he sits, he can see this statue of the goddess Kali, which is in black stone in the little temple on the other side of this colonnade where he's sitting. And he's praying, and it's like 7 in the morning, and it's starting to get very hot. But he's praying and praying, and he prays for 5 hours. Meanwhile, Satish is over there waiting for his lunch. And the temple doors are about to close because they close at noon. And so Master steps out from this colonnade onto this very hot pavement. And then all of a sudden, in his beseeching Divine Mother to please come help him, please come help his brother-in-law, this wave of coolness comes. And his feet are cool, and his wave, beautiful coolness. And in that, he sees the temple starts to enlarge, and Mother Kali comes alive. And they talk to each other. And he says to her, "Please, I beseech you, help my brother to overcome this negativity and know who you are." She said, "Your wish is granted." And everything goes back to the way it was before. He comes up, "Well, you've ruined it again. It's 1 o'clock, and you've been sitting cross-legged and cross-eyed for 6 hours. And what has happened? No lunch." And just at that moment, this man comes out of the back, and he said, "I've been watching you and your divine radiance of your face for all this time, and so I just felt I should put away a little bit of lunch for you." He said, "It's against the temple rules, but I made an exception in your case." And Satish just is stunned, so stunned that he goes back home the next day, says to his wife, "We're going to make our meditation room into your meditation room, into our bedroom, and the big bedroom into our meditation room. And from now on, I will have my search for God." Beautiful story. Well, these stories can be just stories unless we make them real to ourselves. And that's what they are intended to be. Not just to look at them and say, wow, that's wonderful, but what about me? No, they're to help us become who we want to be. And in these two stories, you see these people transformed by the power of God. Are we going to have signs? Are we going to have wonders? Are we going to have miracles happen around us? Not necessarily, except we're all here. To me, that's a miracle. To me that's a sign and a wonder, because the great ones, whether or not you are new and you have taken on Yogananda as your guru, I don't know. But the fact that you're here saying, I want more. I was talking to some friends yesterday, and we were talking about how we came to Ananda, how we found out about the path. And just a small group of people, it was profound, the stories people told. Like miracle after miracle. You look in your own life, where were you 10 years ago, 1 year ago, 20 years ago? And where are you now? Where is your consciousness now? What has happened to you through the power of prayer and the Master's effort on your behalf to bring you to where you are today? So where can we see God? And really, God is everywhere. God is everywhere. Now it's springtime. Look how beautiful this. Flowers are all coming out. Lahari brought us these tulips the other day. And you look inside this tulip and it's just incredible. This red tulip and this black pistils and sepals, and they're in there, and all these different colors and white and blue, and it's just magnificent. And you wonder, oh my gosh, this is all around us all the time. I was watching a YouTube the other day someone sent me, and it was about the astronauts, and it was early on when they were first going up in space. And their whole focus, and it shows movies of them inside the capsule, and they're up in space, and their whole focus is on the moon. They're going to the moon. It's like a lifelong dream. They've been training all their lives to get to the moon. But then one of them turns around and sees the earth, and he's just in awe, and he has everybody come look. And now it's sort of commonplace, you know, it's commonplace. We see pictures of the earth, but to them it was just this revelation beyond belief, just in awe. The blues, the greens, the whites, the swirling, they would go from day to night. And one of them was saying, you know, when we walk on the earth, it's like solid, feels solid. And we always talk about, does he have any earth in his sign? We say to people that are sort of, you know, out there. And does he have any earth in his sign? It's like, it's solid. But he said, when you look at earth from up in a spaceship, you realize that it is very fragile. It's just hanging in space. It's just there. It's like any other star, any other planet. It's just hanging there. How is that? And then one of them had such a profound experience that when he gets back to Earth, he asks people, what does this mean? Can you explain what I felt? This is what I felt. Can you explain it? Nobody could explain it. And he said, I'm a scientist. It wasn't scientific. I'm not a religious person. It's not religious. What is this experience I had? So he goes to the library, and he asked the librarian. She didn't know what it was, but she said she would look it up. So she comes back in a week or so, and she said, well, the closest thing I could find to what you are explaining to me is called Savakalpi Samadhi. Unbelievable. Those of you that don't know about that, I mean, you know, haven't heard about that. Samadhi is the experience of God. It's getting beyond the mind, beyond this physical body, beyond your perceptions, and knowing and experience God consciousness, like in the readings, experience in cosmic consciousness. There's no boundaries. You can see everything. You can feel everything. That was what she found, whether it was or not, it doesn't matter. But extraordinary. So God is everywhere. He's in nature. He's inside us. It's like he radiates out from us. What does it say? All creation is an intuitive perception in your heart, in your own heart. That's where God also dwells. And there's it's just like we are in this battle, like in Kurukshetra. And we're in the Bhagavad Gita, and we're in this battle every single day. And what is our choice? What are the choices that we make every day? And how do we make those choices? And who's influencing those choices? I read this beautiful story of this, true story of this man who, at 17 years old, he was told he had juvenile diabetes and that he wasn't going to live very long. And he just became so in despair, sad, angry that God would take, well, he didn't believe in God at that point, that the world would take away his life. He had so much to live for. He was just furious. And somehow he accepted to go to this wonderful lady that worked with people. And for 6 months, he wouldn't talk, except to say how mad he was. But she just kept pouring love and all this stuff on him. And one day, night, he had a dream. And in that dream, he was in a big room. Maybe it was this big. I don't know. I don't think so. But anyway, a room. And he was at one end. And at the other end was this tiny statue of Buddha. And what she says is, he wasn't religious, but he lived in California, so he knew what a Buddha was. I love that. And so he just was mesmerized by this statue, this Buddha. And he kept looking at it. And his heart was starting to feel a lot of devotion. He couldn't understand it. And then behind him came this knife and hurled right at the Buddha and hit the Buddha in the heart. And he just became sick with anguish. This was something he was finally trying to love. He was feeling love. And this heart went right into the Buddha. And then he watched as the Buddha started expanding. Those are the dreams you wish you had, right? And this Buddha starts expanding and expanding and expanding. And pretty soon the Buddha is filling up this room. But the interesting thing was the knife stayed the same size. The pain, the wound didn't get bigger. It stayed the same. So in proportion to this magnificent, huge, expanding Buddha is this tiny pain. And through that dream, the man turned around. His life became different. He realized that he was in charge of that pain. He was in charge of whether he stayed in that or expanded his consciousness to get beyond it. Because, you know, the great ones say, one of the reasons we meditate, that we encourage people to meditate and stay with meditation, is because of that intuitive perception of the heart. When we can become so intuitive, when we can expand our consciousness, we know what's right for us, and we also, these pains become less because everything else is so much more. So as we go through our life, as we make our choices, do we make choices that bring us up or bring us down? Do we make choices that keep us in this little body, in this little consciousness, or do we try to expand beyond them? Last night they played Chariots of Fire. Those of you who have seen the movie, fantastic movie. Love that movie. I've seen it so many times. And there's so many, as I was watching it, I thought, oh, I could talk about that. Oh, I could, oh, no, I should talk about that. And there's just so many beautiful parts of it. But this man, Eric Little, who's a star, he's an Olympic athlete, famous in his time, he has to make a choice. His sister wants him to stay with the missionary work that they're doing in China. But he has to run. And he says in that famous line, I feel God's pleasure when I run. You look at him, even the actor that played him, and you just, your consciousness goes way up because that man is, if he's not in samadhi, he is definitely in bliss when he's running. You can tell God is with him. He's running for God. He wants to run for God. His life is about God, but he uses the tools that God gives him to increase that joy. And so he makes that choice. I will run, then I'll go to China. I can do both, and I can bring that joy to other people because I've experienced it. So it's fine. I remember, you know, is Rambhakta here? I remember when I moved to the village. I think Rambhakta was there. And I had been running. Badura had taught me how to run. Well, I mean, I knew how to run, but he got me running on a consistent basis. But I remember coming to Ananda Village and thinking, oh, this is not a spiritual thing to do. Nobody here runs. And it didn't take very long before, I think it was Rambhakta and Vidura, and I said, okay, it's okay to run. But, you know, you take what you have, take what makes you joyful, and then share it with everyone, and then everyone benefits from that. Sister Gyanamata said, if you can't find God where you are right now, where are you going to find him? Something to meditate on. Wherever God has placed you, you must find him. God is everywhere. We will be able to hear him and see him. But in the meantime, we make those choices that bring him closer to us. Yogananda said in the great poem, God's Boatman, I will come again and again. With bleeding feet, I will come if one stray brother is left behind. What a promise. What an amazing promise that is for us. Us, you know, you go inside and you think, why would he come back for me? But you know what? He sees you as eternal light because he knows you as that light. There's that story in the path. Swami Kriyananda tells about Yogananda saying, if you only knew how beautiful you are. So when you get down, when things get hard, we all go through it. Just remember, God, Guru, Master, see you as beautiful light. And then we want to rise to that, don't we? We want to become that joy so we can go together. And in that final light that's his. God bless you all.